This is the second Sunday of Lent, and we are going through the book Rediscover Jesus. I was, as I was looking through the chapters which we're covering today, they're chapters 8 through 15, through 14. Well, 8, 9, 10, 11, 13. Yep. It's seven. There's 40 chapters. And not counting, if there's 40 chapters, because there's 40 days of Lent, and that's what we're supposed to be doing. The main theme of the kind of the introductory chapter, which was chapter 8, was the radicalness of Jesus. And I'd like to spend a little time with that, because I think the word radical has been used, especially in our political discourse and in social discourse, as someone who is undesirable. We like the word moderate, but the word radical, I don't think we like that too much. And so the issue becomes, if, which the book is telling us to do, and Matthew Kelly is telling us to do, is that Jesus was radical and encouraging us to be radical Christians. So I want to spend some time with that, because, you know, think about it. When we use the word radical in political discourse, for example, the radical right or the radical left, or we say radical Islam. And we can go on with the words radical. And all of a sudden, when you say, because if you think about it, we prefer to say the moderate right or the moderate left or moderate Islam or moderate whatever. And what that tends to do is to apply a standard that Jesus himself would reject. So I want us to spend just a little time with the word radical, because I think it's important that we understand what it means and why it's important to say that sometimes it is good to be radical and sometimes it is not. It's just like, for example, I was in a discussion with somebody, and we were saying, well, and they were telling me, well, it's always good to never to compromise. You know, it's important to compromise, and so we take the middle. If you usually take the middle, you'll be okay. And that's true most of the time, but it isn't true all of the time. Let's say I would like to kill 100 people, and you would like to kill none. Why don't we compromise? We'll only kill 50. Is that a good thing? Well, of course not. But notice, we compromised. So compromise, you might say, in this situation, that being radical might be not killing anybody. And in this case, an extreme would be a good thing, because it's not necessarily true that if you are radical or extreme in one side or another, that in every situation, therefore, it's going to be a bad thing to be in one side or another. So the word radical, where does it come from? It's actually a word that comes from Latin. And the Latin word radice, and radice means the root, the roots of something. In Spanish, if you want to say the root of a tree, you say raíz instead of radice, but raíz. And so the radice, radical, comes from the word root. Now, what would be the opposite of radical? The opposite of root. And I would say that a good candidate for the opposite of radical would be superficial. And the word superficial, again, you know that I love etymologies, okay? Listen to it. Super, which means above, and ficial, which is a way of saying face, which is face. So superficial is something that doesn't get into you. It stays on top, and it doesn't get inside. Radical is something that goes to the root. Now, Jesus was very clear during his lifetime that he would not accept us if we were not only superficial, but his whole notion of being moderate does not gain a tremendous amount of credence with him. Let me give you a couple examples. Do you remember the moment, that time, when Jesus, a man comes up to Jesus and says, "Lord, I will follow you, but first let me go home and say goodbye to my mother, and I mean to my family." Now you would expect that Jesus would say, "Well, okay, but hurry up and come back." Now, what does Jesus say? Jesus says, "Anyone who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is not worthy of me." Now, granted, that is, I don't think Jesus was against, family ties. But if you remember, Jesus was very aware of the fact that we had to put him first. Remember when he said to us, "If you love your mother, your father, your sister, your brother more than me, you are not worthy of me." Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean if you have affection. Please understand, when Jesus is talking about love, Jesus does not mean what we usually understand by love. For us as Westerners in the 20th century or 21st century, we have a tendency to understand love in a much more emotional way. So for us, love can be understood as affection or friendship or romance. All of those can be understood as love. But what Jesus understood as love was something very, very different. Now, Jesus would have lived during the time that Greek philosophy and Greek thinking was very much the mode of the day. And for the Greeks had four definitions of love. The Greeks had four different words for love. You know how we have one word, we use the word love, but the Greeks had four different words, and Jesus would have known them. The Greeks would have the first word would be, or they're not in any order, the word, first word would be storge, S-T-O-R-G-E. And storge in Greek would have meant affection. It's pretty much the most general kind of love. You can have different levels of affection, and you can have affection for even for animals or for music or different kinds of attraction. That's what we mean, for example, when we say, I love this piece of music. It means it brings affection out in us. And you can have affection towards members of your family or anything like that. The second word that the Greeks understood was philia. Now, philia basically means a deep friendship, a bond of friendship, the love of a brother or a sister, not necessarily blood, but the love of someone close to you. Okay? That's where the city of Philadelphia comes from, the name. Philia, love, brotherly love. That's why it's called the city of brotherly love. And Delphos is city. Okay? A brother. And so, the city of brotherly love. So you have storge, and then you have philia. The third one you have is eros. And eros, for the Greeks, we get the word erotic from it. But erotic to us means sexual. For the Greeks, it would have been much more romantic. The love of romance. Now notice, those three are pretty much all feeling-based. Affection, deep friendship, and romance. The fourth was agape. Now, what is agape? In Latin, that is caritas, what we translate into charity. Agape is to love another the way that God loves them. To love another the way God loves them. Now, to Jesus, his understanding of love is the question of who do you listen to? When it all comes down to, do you remember when Jesus would say, if you love me, keep my commandments. Notice he doesn't say, if you love me, you must have affection for me, or you must be my buddy. If you love me, keep my commandments. Jesus was very aware that loving means that you listen closely to what a person is telling you and place it above listening to other people. So that's why Jesus would say, if you love your mother, your brother, your sister more than me, you're not worthy of me. What was he saying? Not if you have affection or, you know, romance or anything like that with anybody other than me. He was basically saying, if you value what another person is saying more than what I am telling you, you are not worthy of me. Because the word love to him means to obey, to listen closely. It's interesting because the word obedience, and to me, that's one of my favorite words now. Obedience comes from obey, which any of you who know a little Spanish, you can hear the word oye, which means to listen. And dire is to what I say. And so to Jesus, to be a disciple of his was to listen closely to what he says and to putting into practice what he says. That, my friends, is the root, the radicalness of being a Christian. Being a Christian is not primarily, and notice I'm saying this, primarily about going to church. Going to church and playing, you know, video games on your phone is not fulfilling your Sunday obligation. The radicalness of being a Christian is to make sure that what we're doing is we are listening closely to Jesus, and we are putting what he is telling us about how to live, we are putting that first and foremost when it comes to all other things that we value. You know, I often remind people that we are Christians. And what a Christian is a disciple of Jesus. What is a disciple? A disciple is a student. You can't be a Christian without being a student of Jesus. And if we are students of Jesus, we are listening to him teach us. And what's the course that we're taking? We're taking the course of how to be human the way Jesus intended us to be human when God the Father created us. And so this whole notion, how did we start here? We started with the term radical. Why radical? Because you can't be superficial. You can't be a Christian who doesn't really listen and allows yourself to be changed by the words of Jesus. When you listen, you can listen to a person either superficially, or you can listen deeply or radically down to the root. What Jesus demands of us is that we study him, that we listen closely to him. That's what the word obey means, that we listen closely, and that when it comes down to how we make choices in life, that our choices be guided by how he would make choices, by internalizing the values, internalizing how Jesus lived, and making that type of lifestyle our own down to the root. That is the radical Christian. And it ends up changing everything, because it ends up being that you don't just go to church. You come here to study Jesus. That's why sometimes, even though I don't like it 100%, I don't disagree when you go to a Protestant church and you hear the pastor say, today's lesson comes from, and the pastor will say the lesson. That's kind of what they're doing. They're reminding themselves that what we're doing here is studying. And what we're studying how to be like Jesus down to the root. Okay? And St. Paul would call it putting on the mind of Christ. In other words, for Paul, he was saying basically, we need to learn how to think the way Jesus thinks. It needs to go down to the root so deeply that you get used to thinking the way Jesus would think, so that it's no longer just, oh, I got to do this. See, a lot of times people say, well, you know, the Catholic Church, all these rules and all these things. Folks, they're only rules when you don't think deeply, when they're still out here. Let me give you this example. Do any of you feed your children because there is a law that says you cannot starve them? Well, of course not. You feed your children, or you take care of your elderly parents or your brothers and sisters. Why? Not because there's a commandment, but because you love them. And the more you internalize what Jesus is telling us, the more you get it down to the root, the more you begin to think like he does, And the more you begin to do things and to live your life the way Jesus did, not because there's some external commandment telling you you got to do this and this and this, but because more and more you're being transformed into at the root of who Jesus is. And so, you know, that's part what Lent is all about, is all of that. It's about, you know, I can't help it. I periodically hear people saying, well, what did you give up for Lent? And what did you give up for Lent? And that always makes my skin crawl. Just a little bit. Just a little. Because if you understand it to mean that I'm doing something which hurts so that God can see that I love him, and then when Lent is over, I'm going to go right back to where I was before, as if the pain itself that had caused you to give up something was valuable to God without any change occurring. And the whole point of Lent is not that. I tell people, because I used to do that. When I was growing up, I used to give up chocolate for Lent. Right? Because now that I'm diabetic, I can't do it, but I used to be a chocoholic. And I would give up chocolate for Lent, and then I would imagine that God would see how much I loved him because I was dying for chocolate. Okay? And I would say, and he would look and say, oh, look at how Mario is suffering for me. And then on Easter Sunday, I would go to Walgreens and buy the mother of all solid chocolate bunnies. And I would eat the whole thing. And I'd get sick. And I'm sure that God was up there looking, oh, look at Mario being sick in my name. How wonderful. How wonderful. Folks, that was silly. That's why I love it. St. Teresa of Avila, one of the little sayings in the back. St. Teresa of Avila said, one of my favorite quote of hers, she said, from silly devotions and sour-faced saints, gracious Lord, deliver us. From silly devotions and sour-faced saints, gracious Lord, deliver us. So what are we about? We're about really becoming radical Christians, but not radical in some sort of a lunatic way. Radical as opposed to being superficial. Radical as saying we are the people who are students of Jesus. We are here to study how to be human beings like he was, because he is the original human being. It's kind of like God saying, look, you all have messed it up so badly. Let me come. You know, what's the old saying? If you want something done right, you do it yourself. And so it was like God saying, okay, I'm coming and I'm going to be human so that you can tell what it means to be a human being. And that's why we're his disciples, because we are learning from him and allowing ourselves to listen down to the root. And if you remember, and I'll close with this, what was it that in the gospel today, when the cloud came over Peter, James, and John, and Jesus and Elijah and Moses, and the voice came out of the cloud and said, this is my beloved son. Listen to him. That is what it means to be a disciple. To listen, to learn, and to be changed.